Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 5 of the Strokes and Jokes podcast. We are here with our special guest, Ryan French, and Carter has some questions.
So Ryan, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your history with golf?
Yeah, sure. So I played junior college golf, and then I tried to walk on at a four-year school and realized I wasn't good enough. And from there, how the account started is, so after college, my dad and I would take a yearly trip to go caddy on a mini tour. So we did a bunch of mini tours, e-golf, Hooters, NGA, the old Hopkins tour, Dakotas, and then mostly a lot of the time in Canada. So, from there, I've just met a bunch of guys.
And so you just, like, use your connections through caddying to kind of start this up and stay connected with those players?
Yeah, I mean, there's a long time between those trips and starting the thing. So after that, I definitely made some connections. I was lucky enough to caddy in Q School, a couple of web events, a bunch of Monday qualifiers, those kind of things. And then I was working that whole time. I was in the restaurant business. So I ran a group of restaurants. And so from there, I was looking at Monday qualifiers and mini tours and those kind of things, just because a lot of guys I had become friends with and caddied for were playing in those events still. So I was looking at that. And then about a year ago, my son has had some health issues. He had brain surgery about 2 years ago. And about a year ago, I decided to stay home. And so that's how the account started.
I guess I'm kind of interested in is, like, how do you kind of get connected with a golfer to caddy for him, let's say, on a Monday qualifier? And I live close to where the Rocket Mortgage Classic took place this past summer. And, like, I know they moved the dates to, like, late May this upcoming year, which is the Olympics. And I would be interested in doing something like that for the Monday Q for that. How do you kind of get connected with the players?
Yeah, I always encourage people, if they can caddy, to do it. PGA Monday qualifiers are a little bit harder just because guys are out there, are connected. But a way to do it is, two ways, is go to the pre-qualifier and find a player. Guys at pre-qualifiers are often either looking for caddies or don't have one, so they'll be happy to take one. And then if they get through, then they'll usually take you to the Monday. Contact the course itself and just let them know you're available, or you can go hang out there on Sunday and see if you can pick up a bag. In a Corn Ferry Monday or a mini tour that doesn't allow carts, it's relatively easy to pick up a bag. But now, I mean, with the account, it's obviously easier. And I know guys, and I've caddied before, I always say that the first bag's the hardest, and then after you get the first bag, especially in qualifiers, it's a little bit easier. Just stay connected with guys, and then as they come around, to a Monday qualifier at the Rocket Mortgage, you let them, ask them if they need a caddy, or they might know somebody who needs a caddy.
That's a really cool, with that kind of thing. Have you made any relationships with people that have contacted you again, requesting you to caddy if they made it, through the qualifier, and if they did well? Have you ever been, asked to come back and caddy for a prior tournament?
Yeah, so I have a horrible record in Monday qualifiers. I don't know how many Monday qualifiers, but it's like I'm like 0-20 or something at least. But most of those times that you caddy, especially as you know, guys, is often they'll take you to the event if you get through. But I haven't gotten through, so. As you connect with guys, they definitely like. I caddy for a guy named C.D. Hockersmith every time. He's a mini tour player, and he stays at my house. And when he comes to Monday qualify for the Evans Scholar every year, I caddy for him. I was lucky enough to caddy for a guy named Brian Yip, who plays on the Corn Ferry Tour multiple years in Canada before it was McKinsey Tour. And he won when I was a caddy, and it was an awesome experience. So I caddied for him year after year because it was a place that my dad and I went often.
That's really interesting. You talked about how you and your dad used to go caddying on a yearly trip. Any like funny or interesting stories you can recall on from the back then?
Yeah, I mean, there's great stories. I wish I would have kept a journal, because I'm sure it was better. I mean, it's a great trip just from the standpoint of, you know, I get to bond with my dad and hang out with my dad, you know, after college. So it was, you know, definitely appreciate those times because we didn't spend a ton of time together anymore after I got through college. So it was great. But yeah, I mean, I caddied for a ton of guys. My dad was on the bag for 3 holes in 1. I mean, we met a ton of guys. My dad caddied in a group with like Graham Dillette, who's had a good career, Hugo Leon, who's had a good career. I've caddied for Ryan when he won. I mean, off the course, we had many funny experiences. Our tent blew. We camp every year. Our tent blew away 1 year. there's a ton. We got caught in a horrible thunderstorm and almost ran out of gas because all the gas stations didn't have power. There's plenty of great stories. I encourage anyone to do it. Mini tours are a little different than they were back then. You used to be able to go and find a bag pretty easily, but a little bit harder now. But Canada, you can still find a bag pretty easily. And I mean, it's just an awesome experience. It's a great way to see golf up close that most people inside the ropes that you're never going to meet it. It's going to see some great golf, and you're going to make connections with some guys that, you know, might eventually play on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, that's super cool. So you were talking about your you played junior college and you tried to go to a 4-year school. So playing junior college, you know, Carter, Spence, and I, we all play college golf, and I was just wondering if you can kind of talk about your experience in playing golf and tournament golf and how that's maybe prepared you to be on the bag for somebody who is possibly going to win a tournament one day.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's super helpful. You know, I played for a quote-unquote good junior college. It gave me some perspective of how good there are guys are who are out there chasing it. You know, I was playing what I thought was good golf, and then you know, got to Michigan State, and it was like, these guys are way better than I am. So it definitely gives you, I mean, but you know, that just because you're shooting 74 or 75, you prepare for a golf tournament relatively the same as guys do. But I think I learned the most from caddying the first few times. I mean, the first few times I kind of just carried a bag and kind of took all in what kind of detail these guys go into, what kind of preparation they go into. And so I think caddying was probably the more, you know, where I learned the most, because I learned what those guys are looking for.
Yeah, so I think that's an awesome experience, and I think I'd definitely be interested to do it in the future. I think Spencer has a question for you.
So I guess what's the motivation? I guess what sparked the idea with telling the unheard stories of these smaller tours like the Korn Ferry Tour and everything like that? I guess what kind of stories and what kind of happens with that?
Yeah, so I mean, it was just from the standpoint of, I think people don't understand the level of players even on the like mini tours, even below Korn Ferry, like Canada and Latin America, mini tours across the country. I think people have, you know, at their club they have a great player or their club champion who notoriously thinks that if he practices or had time to practice for 6 weeks, he'd be out there. And you know, the account kind of started like, hey, these guys are amazingly talented. Even the guys who are not making it out there are amazingly talented. It's just a different level. And the main motivation for the count was really that the pro golf is not all it's cracked up to be, because people think of pro golf of like Ricky and Tiger, and those guys who like fly private and have teams around them and those kind of things. And most of pro golf is played on like the Korn Ferry Tour or a mini tour around the country, and these guys don't have any money. They're driving and staying in hotels 4 or 5 at a time, 4 or 5 guys in a hotel room. You know, they don't have any money. And so that was really the motivation, is to show a different side of pro golf.
Yeah, that's super cool. So I was looking at your Twitter, and I saw you had, you know, 20,000+ followers or whatever. You know, that's just awesome to get that kind of recognition. So what exactly did you do to build up your, you know, your Twitter followers, and, you know, to kind of almost make your brand? You know, how did that all, like, get to where it is now? And what are some of the things you did to get that recognition to where you got those type of followers?
Yeah, I mean, I never really intended it. I mean, I never thought, not that I didn't intend it, but I never really thought that it would ever get this big. I mean, really, it was something to do that when I stayed home with my son and my we have a daughter also. And so it's grown crazy fast. I mean, I really have just put in as much concentration as I can on content. There's a million stories in pro golf. And so, I mean, I've worked hard to chase them down. You know, as it grew, I've worried about the brand and what I wanted to do and kind of the future and what I want to do next and those kind of things. But, you know, I think if you want to start a Twitter account or a podcast or whatever it is, I think a main part of my concentration is content. And the other things will kind of take care of themselves. That's my advice to people. Is, you know, I spend 90% of my time on content and 10% of trying to figure out what's next, you know, clothing or merchandise or doing a podcast or whatever. I really think content drives everything. And so that's kind of my focus for my brand is put out great content and other things will take care of themselves.
Right. So as like far as like going back a little bit, like covering these stories about how these guys have like no money and no, they're basically just grinding, and there's just so much depth in the like in golf, especially like becoming a pro. And I think it's definitely relatable even here at like the Division III level. You know, I go home for the summer and like a lot of us has to work, and you know, these Division II golfers, some of them have memberships at these courses and they just get to practice all summer long. They have nothing to do, which gives you such a good advantage on everybody else that's trying to make it. And I mean, some of these guys, some people have more money than others, and some people, you know, paying entry fees and all this other stuff. I think that what makes it so good that you're covering all these unheard stories, because there's so many good golfers out there and, you know, they don't get the recognition that they deserve.
I think it makes it relatable to just a common viewer and the common golfer. Just They you can find something to relate to, the people who are grinding away on the tours. Yeah, they may be better at golf than us, but like they're everyday people.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, that's what's come out of the account is, I think people think of golf as an elitist sport, you know, and they think of it as country clubs and everybody who belongs there is wealthy, and obviously golf has, for the most part, has a lot of money in it, country clubs and those kind of things, but there's plenty of guys who don't have money, plenty of guys who don't come from money and have to do the things that you guys talked about, whether it's caddy or get sponsorship from players at their club, or you know, I have a friend of mine who plays on PGA Tour China, and when he's home in Chicago, he walks dogs. So he goes to the range in the morning and then plays 18 holes and then comes down. He lives in downtown Chicago, and you know, he walks dogs in the afternoon and the evening to make money. And I mean, it's just the reality of where he's at. He's got to pay rent and those kind of things and entry fees and fly back and forth to China, and that's super expensive. And so you know, to keep his dream alive, that's what he does.
Yeah, that's crazy to think of. Like, you got guys that are really trying to make it, and their side job is walking dogs just to get that entry fee and just to chase that dream. So another question with how you were talking about, you were also in the restaurant business. Are you still in the restaurant business, or have you really put all your time and effort into your Twitter account and your brand?
Yeah, so I'm not working currently, but I never intended to not work this long. It's kind of gone hand in hand with the Twitter account kind of blowing up. Is, you know, I haven't gone back to work, but you know, medical bills are a very serious part of our lives. My son has a lot, and so you know, I'm working to monetize it. That was never the intention of the account at the beginning, but in order to make it work for my family, I got to find a way to do it. So I'm working on those things, and we're going to give it a little bit of time here, but if it doesn't happen, I'm going to have to go back to work. But I think with the platform I have, the following I have, I mean, my followers have been awesome. We'll figure out a way to make it work and, you know, kind of grow the brand from what it is.
And I have a question. I mean, I've been following your account since probably April or May, and one of my favorite stories from this past year that you covered is Chip McDaniel. And, like, I remember I've watched him play at the U.S. Open, and then he had to travel all the way to Boston to get there Monday morning after that final round Sunday, and Monday qualified for that tournament. And I guess, what was your favorite, what's your favorite story from this past season or that you've covered?
Yeah, I mean, Chip's right up there for sure. I mean, Chip had an unreal story. Talk about a guy that doesn't come from a lot of money. He's a perfect example of that. He grew up in a really tiny little town in Kentucky. His family doesn't have a ton of money. And he's a great story on top of the great story that he produced last year, flying across the country and those kind of things. Doc Redman was an unreal story. I caddied in the Rocket Mortgage for a different guy. And, I mean, obviously his life changed that week. And then, I mean, lastly, Corey Connors is obviously, he had status on the PGA Tour, lower status, but, you know, his life changed for sure when he won. I mean, he went from that to the Masters the next week, from the Valero after he won, after Monday qualified, went to the Masters. He was in the Tour Championship this year. He'll be in every WGC next year. He'll be in every major next year. It just shows that your life can change in 1 week.
Yeah, and to go along with that question, sort of, is like, with like the new graduates of the Corn Ferry Tour and like the rookies that are coming onto the PGA Tour this year, what's a story to look out for? What's one of the favorite stories that you see out of them guys?
Yeah, I mean, I used one today when I was talking. I think Harry Higgs is a great story. I mean, he encompasses a lot of what, that pro golf is a process for a lot of guys. I don't remember the exact number, but I think in the first 2 years of Q school, he beat like combined 5 players or something like that. He finished second to last 1 year and then beat like a few people the next year. And then eventually got to the Latin American Tour, did great down there, won the Order of Merit, then played great this year at Corn Ferry, and kind of did just the natural progression that a lot of golfers go through. And I think he's going to be, I think he'll be a success next year. Chase Seifert has a lot of game. He'll be out there. There's a lot of guys that I think will do well. I mean, Scottie Scheffler should do great for sure. But maybe of the lesser known players, Chase Seifert and Harry Higgs.
All right.
You were kind of saying a couple minutes ago, you know, a little earlier about how with your Twitter account and everything and your brand, how it's just kind of blown up really quick. And I know with what we're trying to do here at Strokes and Jokes Podcast, you know, we're trying to put out content that people are going to relate to and people are going to, you know, want to listen to. And, you know, one of the things we've always said that we believe in is that all it takes is the right person to listen, the right person to get engaged for your, you know, something to blow up. I was just curious on how, you know, if there was something that happened to you that out of nowhere you just went from having a couple hundred followers to a couple thousand, or if there's anything that, like, happened to you that really made your content blow up really quickly.
Yeah, I mean, my advice to you guys or anybody starting out is again, just concentrate on content and don't let things get in the way or people distract you from that. As far as like specifics, I had a couple of big things happen. I mean, it was growing relatively steadily. And then, you know, a couple, Chantel McCabe from the Golf Channel and then a couple other Golf Channel personalities followed me. And then, I did the Fried Egg podcast. Andy from the Fried Egg has been awesome to me. So that was a huge step for me, is I got on my first podcast, and Andy has a huge following. So that obviously helped. And then the PGA Tour itself followed me, and that helped. And then, just from there, it's the Chip McDaniel thing really helped me. A lot of media picked that up. Golf Channel picked it up, and Golf Digest picked it up, and those kind of things. I've had articles written, and then story about my son and my account in Golf Magazine. And then today I was on a podcast for Golf Digest. So all those things I don't take for granted at all. I mean, I'm very appreciative of everybody having me on, and but you know, just I keep my head down. It's very cool. It's very surreal. I appreciate it very much, but I keep my head down and try to just keep growing content. Don't let those things get to your head, for sure.
Yeah, I love the advice. You know, I know all of us here, we definitely appreciate that and definitely appreciate those words. And, you know, another thing, I was talking to somebody today and I was mentioning the podcast and how we're growing and how, you know, we just got on Apple Podcasts and stuff, and how we're on Spotify. And they were telling, you know, it was their opinion saying that we need to not focus just on golf because golf isn't that popular. And I was just curious if there's been any stories that you've done that were not golf related that have maybe, you know, helped with some like new perspectives and new following in your content.
I mean, I'm really concentrating golf. I just believe there's a market out there. Especially if you find the right niche. Obviously, I found a niche that a lot of people weren't covering, but everyone says like golf's dying, and obviously from a big like 50 story level, that's true. But there's tons of golf fans. You'll reach them. The world has become much smaller. I mean, I have followers from every part of the country and the world. I mean, a guy from Australia, Iceland reached out to me today. I mean, it's crazy. So the world's smaller. No, I'm not going outside of golf. I'm going to just concentrate. There's enough people who love golf that will find me or you guys or whoever if you just keep plugging away.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what we're doing here. Golf is definitely our main focus, and I think there's a huge thing in it now is, you know, we're trying to make it a little more relaxed and, you know, trying to make golf funny and not so serious and, you know, counting. When we interview players, we don't like to ask them, you know, about tournaments they've won, that kind of thing. We'd like to have relaxed interviews and that kind of thing and ask just life questions in general. That way, you know, people outside of golf can relate to golf even if they don't play the game.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great way. I mean, I think that's why my account has grown is people think of golf as country clubs and people with money and those kind of things, and it just really isn't. There's a large majority out there playing on public courses or even guys that are out there on tour now who came from deep, you know, not a perfect background. Just talked to a pro golfer who was raised by a single mother, and she worked four jobs. And I mean, have fun. This game is not that serious. It's still a game. And, laugh about it, tell some stories, and I think things will work out.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that because, you know, I think it was a couple of nights ago we were doing a podcast on all the golf rules and, you know, issues with players' equipment and stuff. And I know one thing we talked about is, you know, it's just getting too serious. It needs to be more fun, more laid back. And it's like some of these rules are just ridiculous. And when interviewing these people, it's not, you know, they don't want to talk about golf. In the podcast we did the other day, we were talking about Brooks Koepka, quoted when he was on the Barstool Sports podcast, saying, you know, golf's just too long. You know, he really doesn't even, he enjoys it, but I think people think these guys, all they want to do is play golf. And I think in the end of the day, they really just want to, you know, they want to talk about their life and not as much about golf in a lot of these interviews. And that's kind of why, you know, with interviewing you, we've really focused on your life, you know, how you got to where you're at. Not so much like, oh, how was caddying for this person or how was doing this. We want to know about your life. And we definitely want to figure out, you know, the background story about your life and less about the whole golf aspect, because in the end of the day, it's about you and you're a person just like everybody else. And that's really what we care about here.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. I think if you can humanize, I mean, again, I think that's why people are interested in my account or things like it, is because it's kind of humanized pro golf. I think the tour and golf media in general just doesn't cover this, the human aspect of it. They cover the golf aspect of it, and you know, like you said, these are just people just like you and I. They just happen to have a great ability, and let's talk about their life and their upbringing and what got them there, and the things and challenges they had to go through in order to get there.
Yeah, I completely agree. So, you know, in the future, with your content and the things that you're about, what are some things that you're looking forward to doing in the future? Maybe some trips, you know, possibly caddying more, possible people you really want to, you know, follow, or some, you know, possible stories that you're definitely looking forward to in the 2020-21 season.
Yeah, I mean, that's the good thing about Monday qualifiers is, and many tour events, is these stories come up weekly, and so I think that I don't want to get too far ahead of like concentrating on a story or hoping that a person gets in or this person doesn't get in. I really am just, I do as much background work as I can, and then when they get through on a Monday qualifier, tell their story. So as far as like traveling, I mean, I think if I get some funding and get some things going, I'd honestly like to go to the final stage of Q school. I'll still try to go no matter what next year to as many Monday qualifiers as I can. You know, I have two young kids and a wife that's working her ass off to help support this, and so obviously that's a portion of it. But I'll go to as many events as I can. I love golf. I love covering it. So I'll figure out a way to make this work, and I'll be at as many events as I can. The good news is the events I cover, the tours, and the people want me there, and they want my coverage. So they've been super awesome about letting me have access.
Yeah, so now that you're busy doing with the Monday qualifiers and stuff, and how often are you able to play golf and just enjoy golf for what it is?
Yeah, I don't play a ton. Most of that is just time-related. My wife has 2 days off a week, and so I'm with the kids every other day, and then, but I mean, I love the game. I just was lucky enough to play in a course up in Michigan that was unreal. But I mean, I play as much as I can. I probably play 10 times a year, but I would play 100 times a year if I could. I love it, and I love it as much as I did when I played all the time, but life gets in the way of those kind of things. And my hope is, my dad quit the game for a long time when we were young, and then when I started to play, he played a bunch, and we played all the time. So when my kids are old enough, I hope they'll want to play. It's okay if they don't, but if they want to, I'll play again as much as I can.
And I guess that with like life getting in the way and stuff, it kind of makes how you said that you could play if you could, you'd want to play 100 times a year, but it kind of makes those 10 times that you're able to more special, and the people you're around and enjoy that a lot more.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, golf is for me is different now. I mean, I used to go out and worry about a number and really grind away even when it was just like casual rounds. But, I mean, I just played terrible in Michigan, and it was still a lot of fun. A follower of mine invited me to his club, and I mean, it was a great time. Regardless of how I played, it doesn't mean I don't want to play well. I do. But it's definitely the game, and the game and what's important to me has changed for sure. I just want to go have fun, and I don't play enough to shoot 74 or 75 anymore, so might as well just go have fun.
What course in Michigan did you play?
The Dunes Club in New Buffalo. It's a 9-hole course. It was owned by a guy who has a greeting card empire. It's pretty amazing. Have you guys heard of it?
Yeah, I actually have. My uncle, he's from DeWitt, Michigan.
Okay.
He is a Cleveland Golf and Srixon sales rep. We're actually going to try to get him on the podcast in the following weeks. and he's actually played there a few times. He said he loves it. He said it's an awesome little track.
It is, yeah. So they you play nine hole. It's a nine hole course. You play nine, and then as you make the turn, they go and change the cups for you. And there's like different tees from. There's no tee markers, and there's a bunch of different tees from each hole, so you can have different options of how long you want to play it. It's a pretty unreal experience. It was a follower of mine who I only met once, handshake, talked to him for about 5 minutes, invited me, and it was awesome, unreal.
Yeah, that's definitely awesome. It's almost like kind of your own little custom made course that you got to play and everything. Yeah, if you think about it in a way.
It's really cool. It was a great golf experience for sure.
So how often do you get to play golf in Michigan? Like, are there any other courses up there that you've played before that you could maybe talk about?
Yeah, I mean, I don't play a ton in Michigan. I play down here. I mean, there's a ton of great public courses in Chicago area. I mean, you could play here forever. I had the guy that I was talking about earlier that's on PGA Tour China. His name is Joe Gunnerman, and he came from Philadelphia, and he thinks that the public golf courses in Chicago are 10 times better than any city he's ever been to, and he's traveled the country. So, a bunch of great golf courses down here, and that's where I mostly play is around here.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I know us playing college golf, every spring break, we take a trip down to Pinehurst, and we get to play a bunch of courses down there, like Longaberger, that's here in Ohio, Tobacco Road. Heard of Tobacco Road, we got to play there, and then a lot of courses down there. We got to play
Pine Needles.
Yeah, Pine Needles. We got to play.
Oh, nice.
We got to play a couple Golden Bear courses. That was a lot of fun. But yeah, I definitely think playing golf courses in different states get a completely different look. Cause down there, I mean, it's just there's a lot of pines. There's just really tight fairways and stuff. A lot of trees up and down. North Carolina and the Pinehurst area. And, getting down to Pinehurst number two. We my freshman year, I actually got to meet Ken Griffey Jr. in the clubhouse at Pinehurst number two, which was super cool, seeing those kind of people. So yeah, that's definitely awesome that, that you're talking about playing, put those public courses in Chicago, and it's probably cool to, when you travel or play these different courses, seeing all kinds of different course layouts and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, there's a ton of variation in the courses around here. I mean, Andy from the Fried Egg does a great job with the architecture side of things. He does countrywide and nationwide. Courses all over, but he's done a ton of good deep dives into the courses in the area.
Yeah, that's awesome. So we're about to wrap up, the interview. Is there any final comments maybe you want to talk about, or any final words of advice for us, starting our brand, and things that if you've looked through our content and listened to, if there's some things you think maybe that we need to work on or some things that we should cover more maybe?
No, I think things come with time. I mean, I've looked at things you guys have done. Just keep it up. Don't let people discourage. And then, I think that one thing that I've done is kind of look back and kind of learn from, not my mistakes, but learned on how to get things better. Just learn from what you do. And, I'll figure out every day I learn something new. So just keep at it. And things will take care of themselves.
Well, Ryan, we can't thank you enough for being on here and you sharing your advice and everything with us. Everything you've said is really going to help us as we go along and, building our podcast and our brand. We really can't thank you enough. Thanks for being on with us today.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks again.
Yep, thank you. Have a good day.
All right, you too.
After that interview, what an incredible story from him. We have a couple things to recap, and I think one thing we can all share our opinions on is just the depth of how golf is, and there's so many different tours and so many underground golfers. And just for an example is Tiger Woods one time can miss a cut, and then the next very tournament after he can win. And there's just a lot of people that don't have the opportunity or the money to pay these entry fees and travel. There's so much traveling involved. And I guess, what do you guys think on that as well?
And I just think it's amazing. And once again, I can't thank Ryan enough for coming on and sharing his story and his viewpoint about all these golfers on the there's stories that haven't been heard before, and just how, like, even his friend that he said plays in China, that he comes home during the off season there, and he walks his dogs to earn money so he can play on the tour over in China. And I think that's just something that most people in the golf community haven't heard about before, and I think it's really, truly amazing.
Yeah, I agree. It was a great experience to have his insight, you know, from his life story of caddying, you know, him growing up, you know, with his son having, health issues and all the things he's had to overcome. You know, right now he's really focused on his content, and he talked about his wife, you know, how she's working really hard to help support his dream and the things that he really cares about. And I also know that, you know, those are things that, you know, here at school, you know, us working on this podcast, we're also doing those same things. Is, you know, we've got golf practice, some of us work, you know, clubs and class, homework, but yet we're still, you know, taking the time and sacrificing our, you know, our time to, that we could be doing, you know, fun things to really work on the brand and something that we truly care about and something that we've created. And I definitely believe that, you know, Ryan's really given us that, you know, insight and, you know, really big help on things that we need to work on and things that we're doing well to help, you know, build our brand and expand as well.
I think another thing that we can draw from what Ryan said with how his wife's working extremely hard to provide for their family is that to try to grow your brand and try to make something out of nothing is like you really need a good support system. And I think we have that here, and that's what we're going to use to grow into more success down the road.
So another topic that Ryan kind of brought up was caddying and how they just kind of show up to these tournaments and get on a bag. And I guess as far as I've always thought, is, you know, that caddy is probably someone that was a golf coach of his or a golf mentor or, you know, someone that they can trust. And or either even like a lot of the players, I always thought that it was one of their friends, you know, someone that they know and they can travel with. And it's crazy to me that some of these players just show up and, you know, they have people on call just hop on their bag. And especially, you know, sometimes these golfers are taking them all the way through the tournament, whether they win. You know, that can change lives just for an underground caddy to show up to, you know, Detroit Golf Club, hop on a bag and go through a round with these, like, good golfers.
And I think that's also interesting is, like, these golfers who are pre-qualifying and going through the Monday qualifiers is they don't really have the affordability to not get through. And they kind of have to put all their trust into this guy who is walking up on the golf course looking to caddy for someone. And if they go through the Monday qualifier, they go through, or if they don't, and it's like a lot of faith is put into that caddy to change a career of a professional golfer. And I think that's really, truly amazing.
Yeah, it really is. And just like how the whole system works and all these underground golfers and how they're coming up, and it just seems like there's a million different ways to get on tour, and it really just makes you think, you know, about the people that are on tour. And a lot of these guys, you know, they just went to college, they went through Q school. Like, you know, Jordan Spieth went to college, went through Q school. He made it on the PGA Tour. I'm not going to say easily, but I guess in like not a whole lot of a different way. He didn't go through any underground tours. He didn't do any of that. And then you have some of these golfers. And one thing that we like to do on this channel is find out who those golfers are. Like, who are some of the, like, how did some of these guys get on tour?
And I think that's what Ryan does with his brand. And when you talked about Jordan Spieth, is like, that's the difference of someone going straight to the PGA Tour and someone who's grinding for 10 to 15 years before they can even sniff the PGA Tour, is just the opportunity and the financial situation that some people are in. And obviously Jordan Spieth had that opportunity where he would get sponsor exemptions into events, such as the first one with the John Deere Classic way back when. And it just shows how everyone comes from different lifestyles and how they grew up in their childhood and how that can just fulfill how they get to their future.
All right, as we wrap this up, we can't thank you guys enough for listening as we build our Twitter following base, and we appreciate any likes on our Twitter and follows and retweets. You guys keep stroking and joking, and we'll do the same.